very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm good, and it's good to be back. I've been away a lot this season. I will probably be away again some point in the future, but I'm very glad to be here this week because the two episodes we had, there's so much to talk about, and it was kind of tilting as well that I didn't get to talk about it live because this was the one week where like my laptop had to be repaired and I didn't have internet, and so I come back the next day eager to see what's going on, just deathly scared of getting spoiled somehow, and managed to just about avoid that, although it was clear from what people were saying or like the number of notifications I had, this was a very good episode, or something big had happened, so I was kind of eager to see what that would be. And then, like, so Chris gets blindsided, and I thought, okay, that's fine, but it doesn't really seem like it's worth that level of attention. And then we get the second episode, and yeah, just that blew my mind.
At what point did you feel like they were going to rocks? Because it, certainly for me, I still thought there was a very real possibility someone would flip. Did you still feel like that was in play during the revote?
So I accidentally brought on this timing tell where, like, I had to scroll over the video player. There's still, like, 10 minutes left in the episode. And I thought, okay, something's not quite right here. There was a thing early in the episode where, like, they were drawing the rocks at the challenge. And Adam said, oh, yeah, give me the white one. Give me the white one. And at the time, I didn't think much of it. I just kind of registered it as something to maybe flag up in the notes. And then when it became clear we were almost going to rocks, I thought, come on, no, you're not doing this. Not like this. Come on. But then they kind of ruined it because at Tribal, the rocks that they drew were like, it was, the black rock was the one you didn't want to get. But that was had potential to be one of the best, like, subtle trolling efforts of all time by the editors.
Yeah, it did certainly stand out to me on rewatch when David had that moment at the first reward challenge where they had to almost talk him into participating in the rock draw to determine who, what the teams would be and who was going to sit out or whatever. And Jeff had the quote that they clearly deliberately left in. All right, everyone's picking rocks. Let's do it. This is great. That was really, really fun the second time around. Dom, as you've said, a ton to be getting to this week. Quickly, before we get into all that we saw go down here, as I mentioned, you were gone last week. A big thank you once again to Taron Armstrong for filling in for you. He was fantastic. But what were your just quick thoughts on losing Taylor last week?
No real thoughts. I know I did say a few weeks ago that once the two of them, Figgy and Taylor, had been broken up, whichever one of them survived would have a great future in the game. So clearly 2 weeks later, I'm just completely wrong about that, as I am about most things. But I don't know, not too many thoughts on Taylor. I thought he was kind of a fun presence, obviously not an especially likable one, but good comedic value, I guess, for the time he was there.
Yeah, I think he did what he was supposed to do in being just the complete stereotypical millennial for all of the Gen Xers to just hate on.
Yeah, and the Taylor boot itself was kind of boring and unfulfilling, but it is clear in retrospect now there was a lot of this tension simmering underneath the surface, and it maybe was going to take a week or two for that to really explode. And explode it did, because we saw the payoff of that this week, and it was worth waiting for, definitely.
Yeah, well, let's get into all of that. And I think the place to just quickly start, the preview that we got for this week was just kind of that telephone sequence of Will telling Zeke about Jay's idol, and then Zeke telling other people, and it just spreading around to everyone. And that's where this episode kicks off here. What did you make of this scene? Because I thought this was a really fun way of setting up one of the most active episodes, I will say, that we've, like, ever seen on Survivor.
Yeah. Well, that sequence was fantastic. I wonder what Jay, like, how much did Jay know about that knowledge being spread around? Because I would have thought later on, like, if you're trying to sway Jay back to your side, one of the arguments that could have been made, and maybe it was, well, like, Will told Zeke, and then Zeke was telling everyone that you had the idol and trying to get all this suspicion on you. But it seemed like Jay fell in line behind Zeke pretty quickly. So I don't know if he knew the full extent of what was going on, or even if he knew anything about what was going on, but it seemed like everyone else knew the moment Zeke told them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Jay probably, there wasn't anything he could do about Will being there when he found the idol. Like, I think they were explicitly going to look together. But I also feel like when you find the idol under those circumstances, even having already gotten rid of Michaela, who also stumbled upon them knowing about it, in Jay's situation, even feeling as close as he probably does with Will, probably closer with Will than anyone else in the game, I would still have to be treating that idol information as very, very shaky, as not secure at all, is what I mean. As, Will could say anything to anyone at any time, and this could easily spread throughout the whole camp. As we quickly see it, as we quickly see happen here, I feel like when you are the person with an idol that other people know about, as we'll get to later, I feel like, generally speaking, like, Jay should be a lot more willing to be using that idol, because I feel like the value is so diminished at a larger point here when other people know about it.
Yeah, and as you say, Jay, it's important that he knows what the status of that information is, because that's going to play a big role in whether he plays Seattle or not. Is he trying to sit on it? Is he going to think that people are trying to like flush it and put a hit on him later? Like, is this a week to play it? It turns out the first week, or the first episode rather, it seems like he's fine. And then the second episode, he wins immunity, so it's kind of a moot point anyway. But going forward, like, I imagine people will come back after Jay at some point, and when that moment comes, it's going to be crucial for him to know, like, who do I have on my side, who is spreading that around, and who can I actually trust now? Because what we think is in place this week could very easily just be overturned next week if what we've seen is any indication.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there's plenty more on Jay in particular. I do want to get into more just about that and his idol decision both times. I know the second one's probably a lot easier when he has that immunity, that necklace on. But I think the first one, I think there's potentially something to be getting into there. But let's start out with this reward challenge. I think we can get quickly through this. This is a water challenge followed by that color cube puzzle where you have to get one of each color on all four sides of the things showing for Jeff. I tweeted out as soon as this happened that whoever, you know, any future survivors listening, go and memorize how to do this puzzle. I'm really not sure how to do that. I don't know if there's ever a clean shot of like what all of the cubes they give you look like. Although I would imagine that if you can get Jeff Pittman to compile, a shot of all sides of all the cubes, I would guess that they reuse the same cube patterns each time because they know that it works. So I think there is at least something, if there is some way to do it, I think that is worth doing. Nonetheless, okay, sorry, go ahead. I know that that's a random point to make, but do you have anything to add?
Well, you just want to get credit for this again, don't
you? Yeah, I do.
You want to be the guy that everyone turns to, like this oracle, the fount of all knowledge.
I mean, every single thing that happens on Survivor, every single thing that they introduce, I'm advocating for, hey, memorize that, figure out whatever the game, you know, whatever the emergent game dynamic is, or emergent game strategy is. I get credit for all of it, that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, and David sees the writing on the wall here and basically just takes himself out of consideration. He's basically articulating my life philosophy of why ask for something and get shot down when you could just know that you'll get shot down and get shot down on your own terms by never asking in the first place.
Right, save both of us the awkwardness. It's the British way.
Right.
Yeah.
And you see everyone else kind of comforting him, and it's this very sweet moment. And they seem sincere in doing that. But I wonder, because we see David turn into this strategic force in this episode, and even more so than he has been already. And I worry that David, like, for as much as people might like him or empathize with him or trying to understand him, if he's projecting this image of weakness now, and then he goes on to like backstab people and really establish himself as this dominant player in the game, I think the disconnect there is pretty striking. And we've seen that playing to jury votes before, where someone like Dawn, for instance, who ended up having to play this very cutthroat game, which wasn't really in line with her personality, was strongly punished because of that. And for David, you can argue it's maybe very fitting with his personality. Like, he's so neurotic, he wants to be making moves and doing everything crazy. But I don't know if everyone's going to give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
Right, I think you could definitely be onto something. And this was obviously a big, big week for David with a ton of like strategic activity, and I think a ton of just positive content. He was a great narrator throughout both of these episodes, and was a central figure in all of the strategy. We heard a ton from his perspective. I think you are... Do you feel like, I guess, that move that he made of saying, I don't want to participate in this, like, I'll just sit myself out, is that something that you actually would endorse? Because, supportive of it, but it depends greatly on how they're going to... Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I don't think it's a move. I think he genuinely felt like, I want to take myself out of this, but the way that other people see it, if they see it as insincere somehow, and that he's using his anxiety as a ploy to try and do stuff in the game, that's really not going to go down well.
I'm asking, do you feel like that, giving off that vibe of sincerity, oh, I care about you guys, I would never want to take your reward away from you, is worth the potential downside of, you know, instilling even more Don Meehan like trust in people that they're eventually just going to be even more hurt by?
Well, it seems kind of flippant to say, but like, if he was thinking about it in those terms, then he wouldn't be doing it, right? He's doing this because that's how he feels in the moment, and that's what his anxiety is doing to him. And I have the same concern about Hannah as well, because Hannah's someone who, she was straddling the fence there, ended up picking a side. She might have to pick a side again in the future. We saw with Zeke, who, you know, this episode came down to like Zeke versus Hannah in the end. We saw Hannah turn on Zeke before. That didn't go down well with him. And I imagine it's not going to go down well with people in the future too. And if she can't find a way of addressing that criticism in advance and preempting that, then even if she makes it to Final Tribal somehow, she's just going to get torn apart by the jury and not really have a way to win.
Well, I think to tie this back into what we were just saying about David, I think both of them had big, big episodes that I could easily see argued as a lot of, like, good, possible even winner content in there. But I also feel like there's a lot of possible losing finalist content in there for both of them as well. So I guess to kind of to bring it back to David more specifically, because he really was the focal point early in this episode when, as these Gen Xers start wanting to turn on each other, apparently picking off the millennials became just too easy, no longer fun for them. We get this breakdown where Chris, Brett, and Sunday are apparently becoming too much of a threat. And David, to me, I felt like, was showing a lot of real strategic chops early on here, where he was talking about, Zeke, I think, is the best player, and I want to, you know, deal with getting rid of him soon. But right now I have this other strategic priority I think is a bigger issue, and I think Zeke might help me do that because I think it would be in his best interest too. I think that's a really healthy and smart way of looking at the game.
It is. The issue for him and for Zeke, now that they're engaged in this this war, is, okay, one of them's going to win that, and that's fine. But that person immediately jumps up to the top of the hit list for everybody else, because if the argument you're making is, this guy's playing the best game, we have to get him out, well, they're not going to not think that about you at some point. And so you have to be ready for that when the time comes. And the way to do that, I think, is get yourself in this rock solid, like, core group that you know is going to trust you and stick with you no matter what. But I don't know that that really even exists on this season. Like, Zeke, I think, was trying to do that with Brett and Sunday, and I think they will stick with him for now. I think Brett, though, himself understands, like, if Zeke turned on Chris, he can turn on me. And I don't want to go to the end with Zeke because he seems pretty well-liked, or at least respected as a player. And then on the other end, you have David, Ken, and I guess maybe Hannah now that Jess is out of the mix. Like, there's a spot there that she can slide into. And I've heard that floated around as, like, a possible final three that fits with this Ken theory that we seem to be on board with, right? Where if Ken's going to win, David and Hannah seem like two pretty perfect opponents for him to go up against. Like, just let them do all the damage and get the criticism, and he can just slide in there and sweep up the jury votes.
I see. I'm still not so sure how sold I am that, like, I don't know if Ken, I don't buy that Ken is a losing finalist. And I do think, like I've said, that this would make sense potentially for David and Hannah to be losing finalists. But I'm also, I think it's almost as equally likely that David is a losing finalist that he is a winning finalist. Like, I think he, you know, he's the bubble guy often enough and winning often enough. Yeah. I would, you know, if I had to weight them, I would say my top choice would be probably losing finalist. But I still think after this week, I think David is certainly in there. And I know, obviously, this last rock draw didn't end up going his way, and he's got a lot of work to do to get back towards a position where he can win. But I don't know. I feel like what we're seeing from David, even though I'd been dismissing it for the first 2+ months of this season, maybe it's just sheerly by process of elimination, but I'm really starting to come around on it.
You think the Ken wagon is coming off the rails then?
I really don't feel like Ken's edit is getting bad, and I don't want to make this too much into, like, a winner edit discussion right off the top of the podcast, but...
It's not bad in the sense that they're not showing people saying, oh, I really hate Ken, or Ken just, like, out there kicking puppies or whatever, but Ken just doesn't have an edit at this point. He's just not there on the season. Where was the last time he even had a confessional?
Well, he had one over the course of these two episodes, but that's kind of my point is David had, he had probably 4 or 5 over the course of these episodes and plenty more camp life scenes. And he was getting stuff, particularly like in this early part of this episode, right after he won this immunity challenge, where what a hero he came across as in that, right, Dom? Where he outlasts Zeke in this epic battle of endurance. And then he says, this immunity necklace can only be the beginning. It can't be the end. And if I have anything to say about it, Chris is going home. Chris does immediately go home. Yeah. It seems like that is a pretty prophetic confessional.
Right, and David versus Zeke ends up, that's a nice little microcosm or metonymy, if you will, for the season or for the episode as a whole. To finish the thought, though, like, if your closest allies are David and Hannah, okay, maybe they're with you for the short term, but you have to be kind of worried that they're going to misinterpret something, or you might make a mistake, or something's going to trigger that those neuroses, and they're just going to turn on you, or something's going to go badly wrong. Like, I wouldn't be so sure that I can just, like, Sunday, for instance, right, seems to be a fairly loyal vote. You know, if I was Chris, if I was Brett, despite her teaming up with Jess to blindside you a few weeks ago and then randomly flipping on Jess again, but which we can get into later, but, like, she seems like someone who, you know, if you give her a reason to stick with you, she will stick with you, right? She will be a loyal soldier to the end. With David and Hannah, they, even if they feel loyal to you, they might, like, see some reason to do something different and just fly off the handle. So I would not, if I was Ken, I wouldn't be feeling very secure in that.
Well, and the other thing is, as we'll see in the second half of this episode, I would feel like I would have a hard time filling in those two potentially on the plan, because I'm not sure how well they would be able to keep it to themselves in certain scenarios, especially like even as Hannah is trying to be loyal to me, David, in that later conversation with Zeke by the well, when Zeke's confronting her about like what the whole situation is between him and what David is saying about him. And Hannah just gives everything away, even though she's trying as best as she can to stay loyal to David.
Yeah. And I guess the other side of that coin is, to the extent that the two of them are kind of double dealing and sitting on the fence and trying to play both sides, it's because they don't feel they have something secure. And if you can be just like this very calm, boring influence, then that's something that they can find comforting and really stick to. And Ken maybe is the calmest, most boring person out there, and so yeah, he's the perfect candidate for that.
Oh, and I mean, we also see Ken in that one confessional. I believe the content of that confessional was, I have to stick with David because I promised I would never write his name down. And that's all it comes down to for me, is I'm honor bound to do everything David wants.
Yeah, and this is kind of a weird comparison maybe, but like, we saw Jeremy, who made his own move, certainly, and was willing to like strike out and do his own thing. But ultimately, he was just the guy that people felt comfortable with. And in a season where everyone was just losing their minds, Jeremy was just, he was just there, this like this solid presence. And if Ken can be the same kind of thing, then that could bode very well for him.
Well, I think also, just if you are thinking in theoretical terms about what you want in an ally, I think that Sunday type is way more what you want. I think we hear Zeke a lot in this episode talk about, in Civil War terms, he's lining up Brett and Sunday to be his loyal soldiers. Like, that's what I want. I don't want someone who is, untrustworthy and potentially playing both sides.
Yeah, because we see Zeke have to make this choice between Chris and David, ends up siding with David. And if you had told people at that point, at the end of that episode, that at the end of the next episode, or in an hour, given that they were back-to-back, Zeke and David will be at war, and that conflict will define the way that the season plays out in its most dramatic moment, that would be pretty surprising. But the two of them are together for now. I wonder if what went into that was, like, did Zeke think he was writing off Brett and Sunday permanently at that point, or was he thinking, now that Chris is gone, the two of them don't have anywhere else to go, and if I can repair that bridge, I can be the one person that they feel loyal to? Which, if that's the idea, then that's it's a risky play, certainly, but very bold and very creative.
Yeah, I think potentially both David and Zeke felt that way, that by turning on Chris, we saw Zeke the night after they got back from that vote. He said, okay, yeah, the first thing I need to do is go to Brett and Sunday and beat David to the punch there. And then the next shot we see is David before the sun has even come up, trying to get back with Brett and Sunday. So I'm guessing that there was a general vibe that they would get over it and they would be open for working with you as soon as the next round if you take out Chris.
Yeah, so one factor we do often see is you feel angrier at someone who betrays you personally than someone you always expected to be against you. Mm-hmm. And in this case, maybe David was that person who they always expected. Like, at some point, okay, he's under our wing for now, but at some point he's going to come for us. Whereas Zeke was the guy who had the choice and he chose to go with David, so he's the focus of our anger. But it seemed like it worked almost the other way, right? Where, like, they felt almost like this contempt for David for making that move so soon. But it was Zeke who was like, okay, we understand the need for Chris to go. You were the guy who did our dirty work for us, and that's fine. And now we feel fine siding with you against David.
Right. I almost brought this same idea up when we were talking about David being potentially like a Don Meehan figure, where he gets so personally bonded with people that when he does have to stab them in the back, it just hurts so much more. And the example that I always use is, I feel like Dr. Will, the expectation is, of course, he's open about, yeah, I'm going to screw you over, and people seem to not mind, whereas Dan wants to be everyone's best friend, and then like Boston Rob, people don't want to talk to him after the season. I feel like Zeke is someone in that former camp where, for whatever reason, I think just the way he carries himself, people are probably going to be more okay with being screwed over by Zeke, I would imagine, at least at this point, whereas David definitely comes across to me more like that Don Meehan type.
Well, I think it's more of a personality thing, because with Zeke, they can say, okay, you screwed me over, but and as much as I'm mad about that now, I can at least respect the move for what it was. Whereas with David, I think his personality is so tied to his gameplay that if you're annoyed at his personality, you're going to be annoyed at how that manifests itself in his gameplay. And if that means, like, screwing over you and your alliance, then you're going to be, like, it's a lot harder to forgive that when it seems like that's just him being him as opposed to a conscious move that he chose to make, and now you can still like have dealings with him, if that makes sense.
I think one thing that is kind of going unnoted, or at least underreported, as far as just the personality types on this season, is all of David and Hannah and Zeke and probably Jessica and Adam to a certain extent strike me as the type who all would probably be really happy to get a season full of other kind of like quirky big fans of the show, especially when the other people that are on the cast are like Jay, or and Jay potentially a bigger fan of the show than we were giving him credit for, apparently, when I was talking about it with Taryn. Both Jay and Taylor are apparently bigger fans of the show, but I would still say not the most formidable of opponents to be looking at you from the other side. I think it is probably to all of their benefit, to all of the kind of self-described nerdy kid alliance and the older, you know, the Gen X super fans, that there are so many people that kind of fall under the same umbrella this season.
Yeah, and that might be why Zeke chose to go with that side initially, because you look at Chris and Brett and Sunday, and you see this very tight block of votes that's going to go whichever way Chris and Brett seem to want it to go. And the two of them, they seem like you know, they're going to drive a hard bargain, and if Chris decides he wants a gun for you, then he's going to gun for you. Whereas from the outside, David and Hannah might seem more malleable. So like, if you can craft an argument that like appeals to their neuroses, then you can get them to do what you want them to do. And they also seem like maybe easier opponents in the end, who, even if they might be more well-liked on some level, they're going to have a hard time defending themselves against criticism or making a good case for themselves in the end.
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly go back to it, I just feel like David and Hannah in particular would stand out to me, especially if I was Zeke, as people that would be high-risk candidates to try to like lock in a final three right now and ride that all the way to the end to find some like smooth, fun path to the end. I think there's going to be a lot of cause for concern in a lot of those timelines. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. One thing I don't want to skip over before we move on from this first episode quickly is at that reward challenge, just because I'm not sure when else this would come up, Adam in particular, they all got letters from home, but this seemed to be a particular big deal for Adam. Of course, we've found out that his mom has been diagnosed with cancer, and he's, you know, any news from back home could be bad news, but he's just eager to hear anything that he can. We know from the preview that next week the loved ones are coming, and we have seen a lot about Adam and his advantage where he can steal the reward. It looks like when they get out there, he makes some big announcement to the group saying, okay, so I have this reward stealer. My guess is, and I'm hoping that this is what we see, is that he is doing that ahead of time, that this is before the reward has been played, and he is saying to the group, you all know that I have this. I've been holding it for this reason. I am essentially just guaranteeing that I am one of the people picked. Anyone who wins this challenge will still, of course, get to see their loved one. I'm not taking anything away from anyone. And now, more to the point, my advantage over all of you is going to be completely gone, and I will not be a threat going forward.
Yeah, I wonder if, let's say he gets picked just by default anyway, is there some mechanism that he can use to formally give up his advantage? That might actually be a good thing for him to do there.
Well, I think he might, yeah, if he can say, like, if you pick me, as soon as I get picked, I will light this on fire. And if Jeff, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, or even if you win this challenge and pick me, I will give you that advantage so that it's out of play. Now it's in your hands and maybe putting a target on you instead. Obviously not saying that to them, but, you know, you get the point.
Yeah, don't say the target part. Yeah, but no, I actually do. I think the problem is that would probably depend for me on who wins it, because I would probably not want this in someone like particularly Zeke's hand, who I think is probably just going to use it as like an insurance policy against the wrong person winning an advantage, when I feel like I could be that wrong person. I don't want this coming back to bite me, but yeah, I think you are right that if I could somehow ensure that it was going to like Jay or whatever, or Will or something, I think there could be something to that. Or just furthermore, your just general point about, yeah, I think he could say, pick me and I will just get rid of this forever and it will be out of the game for good and we'll all be on equal footing. So that'll be interesting to see how that in fact goes down. I assume that is going to be, you know, next week will be the end of at least Adam having that reward, the reward stealer.
Okay, so the preview for next week is all about Adam saying, I have this advantage that lets me steal someone's reward. Given that, given everything we know about how previews can mislead and so on, do you think he's actually going to use it, he's going to get it somehow normally and it's never even comes into play?
My interpretation of the preview is Adam is there in tears, hugging. His dad was at the live know-it-alls along with Adam's cousin, who looked remarkably like Adam. And his dad does not have a beard, so I don't think it's his dad. that he's out there with, but he's in tears holding on to whoever that is. And I think what they want us to think is he's in tears because he's lost and he's not going to get to see them unless he uses this reward stealer. Whereas I think he's just crying because he sees them in the first place, and right away he's going to say, and by the way, I'm going to ensure that I get this visit before we even start this challenge. So I think that would be at least my call. I think just you bring up some other ideas about what he could do. I'm sure he's going to be thinking about all the different ways that could be in use whenever that loved one visit comes around, because it really seemed like he was dead set on that. So I think this could go a number of different ways.
Sure. Before we move on, though, one quick thing. So after the reward, David gives this great confessional saying that he's always had this gigantic fear of death, and that morphed into a fear of life, and that's what gives him all these reservations about engaging with the world. What did you make of that? So have you always had the same gigantic fear of death?
I actually have not.
Getting right into the deep questions here.
No, this is weird, because I feel like you're totally right to ask me, because I feel like I generally probably come across as someone who would spend most of my time terrified of death. And while I do spend a great deal of my time very consciously aware of, like, wow, we're all going to die someday, what's honestly the real point of any of this? It doesn't terrify me to the extent that it probably should. Like, I feel like I have just resigned myself a decade ago to the idea that I'm going to eventually die, and never really thought why dwell on it? That's my optimistic view about death, Dom.
Well, see, you strike me more as someone who just would never really give the matter any thought. Like, yeah, I'm alive, that's great, so why even bother to think about anything else?
Well, are you in the camp of, oh my god, I'm alive, this is miserable anyway, I don't even mind dying, I can't wait for death to take me?
Well, I'm not scared of death in the sense that I'm resigned to my own mortality. How soon that's going to arrive, I don't know, but, it's not something that I spend time really worrying about. And it's like, I worry about things that could happen to me, but if I die, nothing else can happen to me. Like, I will not be around to experience my own death, if that makes sense. So it's like, why bother being terrified of that?
No, I definitely do have a lot of thoughts where I'm worrying about, like, how things will be after I die, but then think to myself, well, you're not going to be around. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Like, right. it will play no role for you how it's going to be.
No one's going to care, so, like, it's not going to have any impact on the world. Like,
well, no, even if it did have a major impact on the world, I'm not going to be there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, good stuff.
All right, I guess it's like a selfish part that hopes that people are upset that I die, but in, like, a broader utilitarian sense, that's not really a good thing, right? Like, you want people to be happy, not sad, so.
Do you want people to be happy that you die? I don't know if I want people to be thrilled that I'm dead.
No, I don't want them to be happy that I'm dead, but I'd rather, like, not have them so heavily invested that when I do die, they, they're up in arms about it. Not that they would be anyway, but, just as a hypothetical
thing. I see. Yeah, well, I think we've spent enough time talking, at least for now, about death and the infinite abyss that awaits us all. I think let's move on to how this first vote ended up going down. Chris, Brett, and Sunday, as mentioned, have kind of established themselves as a power trio within the game and are apparently putting a big target on themselves. Do we know why they're so set on Jessica needing to be the one to go? We get Chris saying it's from the Paul thing, but does it really come down to that?
So I wondered about the Paul thing, but the most militant anti-Jess person seemed to be Sunday, who, to my recollection, sided with Jess on the Paul thing and then ended up betraying Chris and Brett, but then just going right back to them and being welcomed back into the fold, it seemed.
Yeah.
But it seemed like Jess, there was always this permanent grudge against Jess based on that. So I don't know, because one theory that we had a few weeks ago was that Jess, she doesn't really emote that much, right? Like, she's just kind of there doing her thing. And so
she does when she tries the wrong rock.
Yeah. Wow, sure. Okay, but staying on topic for now. So, like, you see that, and you see that she's kind of closed off almost, and you see it maybe comes across as a bit aloof, maybe, and you think, oh, she doesn't like me, she doesn't trust me, therefore I shouldn't trust her, as opposed to just that's how she interacts with the world and treats people. Like, it's not a personal thing, but it's easy to interpret it that way.
Yeah, I think it may be a similar, kind of like a different strain of the Albert syndrome of, like Cochrane put it, he's just too polished for his own good, where when he interacts with you, it just seems almost untrustworthy because he's so kind of slick. And I don't think Jess is that same kind of slick as Albert, but I think she is, she doesn't, like, I'm not saying, I don't feel like she doesn't relate to people, but I do feel like they wouldn't feel like instantly drawn to her the same way that they would with other people that, like, she doesn't go out of her way, I feel, to make people feel like warmly welcome, I would imagine. But maybe I'm totally wrong.
it's the exact opposite of Albert, right? Like, it's so lacking in slickitude or
whatever
it is that, you know, it seems kind of hostile, but yeah.
It's as if she doesn't like me, almost. I could see it coming across that way. Yeah.
It was kind of funny, though, that there were these, there were a lot of complaints about how the women were getting systematically picked off earlier in the season, and there was some hope and optimism that maybe at the merge things are going to change, and maybe the athletic guys are going to be some of the first targets. As with all optimism, it proved to be unjustified, because Sunday immediately comes out with, right, I'm targeting Jess, Jess needs to go, and it's like, Jesus Christ. And then even when Sunday fails in that, Jess gets taken out by randomness, essentially. So even the Rocks have it out for her this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Zeke finds himself here as the middleman in this kind of Gen X civil war. And, you know, to go back to something we were talking about earlier, had this been just one episode of Survivor and we didn't get to see the second half and we were just in here podcasting this week, I'm guessing I would be talking about, oh, so this is how this group comes together. And now, of course, this trio of Ken, David, and Jessica is going to ride to the end game along with Zeke and potentially Adam. And that's how it's all going to go down. I did not think the civil war that we were in store for was the one between Zeke and David in this second episode.
It's like any theory you come up with to explain what happened in the first episode is completely contradicted by the second episode. So I don't know if things were just moving that quickly or what. But I imagine if these two episodes have been broken up, we would have said a lot of stuff about the first one that would have been just completely disproved by the second one. So I'm kind of glad that we were spared that to some degree.
Well, I'm glad, not only glad that we were spared that humiliation, but more so, I am glad that this episode really plays like almost a movie, like a really well done movie, as if it was scripted, the way that these votes and strategy and civil wars ended up going down. It really, I think, was a well-crafted episode to be a two-hour episode, where I don't think it necessarily would have been the same episode, the same first 40 minutes had they not known that it was going to be a double. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe they didn't have any knowledge at all.
I think that's an interesting theory, but are there any examples of things which you think were built with that in mind?
Well, I think the constant alluding to it being a civil war and using that terminology specifically over and over to kind of throw us off the scent of the eventual big civil war, I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. And just in general, I guess I feel like David and Zeke just over the course of the 2 hours, I think evolved a lot. Like, I think Zeke started off as one of the heroes of the season, and now I've heard people talking about Zeke as the biggest villain remaining.
How is he a villain necessarily?
Well, I think people are viewing it the same way I think people viewed like Richard Hatch as a villain back in the day. He's so cold and calculating and he's just out for himself, and he's even the people in his alliance he's just viewing as soldiers and things along those lines.
He does get some shade from, like, Hannah, I think, says that Zeke is, like, condescending or whatever, and there are a few comments pointed in his direction. But in terms of the way he plays the game, I think he's just, like, he's playing hard, obviously, but that's what you want to see. And I would imagine that in today's, like, strategy-obsessed Survivor, like, fan base and community, that would be a good thing, if anything.
Yeah, I'm guessing that Zeke, probably certainly in older seasons, I think Zeke, in a lot of timelines, could have, like, a stranglehold on a random season of Survivor by this point. I think it's because we have so many people like Adam, like David, like Hannah in there, you know, not to take credit away from anyone else. I'm sure, like, Jay is in there mixing it up, and plenty of other people, but I feel like certainly if you give Zeke like the one world cast or whatever, I think he's killing it right now. And to use a historically bad example, but
as you might want to do. Yeah. I think Zeke, like, this was my reservation about jumping on the Zeke train before, was like, he seems shifty, right? So even when he's not actually doing anything, he seems like he might be untrustworthy, and he certainly is doing stuff now. Like, he is trying to run the game and get everyone on his side. And it's like, I'm not saying there's no subtlety to it, because I think he is trying to, like, he's not boasting to people about what he's doing. He's not, like, demanding that they get on board or whatever. But it's like everyone knows what he's up to. And so I don't think anyone is, like, hoodwinking themselves into thinking, oh, Zeke's my best friend and he's going to be loyal to me to the very end. Like, they know what the deal is with Zeke, I think. Like,
well, I think entering this week, I thought there were people who were hoodwinking themselves into thinking that about Zeke. But now I would argue that they're...
Who?
I don't know. I thought, like, you know, we saw plenty of people. I came in here a couple weeks ago saying it seems like everyone on the island feels like Zeke is their closest ally. I would have said David had plenty of trust in Zeke entering this week for sure.
Okay, and so coming out of this week, now that that's not the case anymore, does that mean you think he misplayed or what's going on?
No, and this is, I recognize now that I've kind of said it both ways, in first saying that I think Zeke is one of many people who benefits from having so many super fans on the cast, and then later saying, oh, if Zeke only had a cast that was worse at the game, he would be crushing it right now. But I feel like Zeke in particular is someone who I think really is capable of making those really close bonds with people. Like, I think we've seen plenty over the course of this season to show why people would really like Zeke. And I think it has been because of having a lot of the David and Hannah types out there really onto him early and really wanting to get in front of it before it becomes something they can't do anything about, which is a very new phenomenon, I would say, among most Survivor casts. I think that is why I'm saying that Zeke, I think, is unfortunate in having so many people that are such big fans of the game, even though they are probably more receptive to working with him in general.
Yeah, there does. And correct me if you feel differently about this, but to me, there's almost like this sense of inevitability that at some point this is going to catch up for Zeke, that someone's going to like idle him out, or that there's going to be this new majority that forms with the express purpose of getting out Zeke, and that he's trying to like spin his tires and trying to get away from that, but it's going to happen to him eventually.
I mean, yeah, Zeke is in Walter White final season of Breaking Bad. Like, we are spread. I need to really have everything break my way here and really just hit everything as hard as I can.
But that's what I think my issue is, and it's not saying that Zeke himself has done something wrong. It's just like when you are so high profile, in a cast which is willing to take shots at you, one of those shots is going to hit, and if you're so like you want to be like third or fourth down on the hierarchy, and Zeke is firmly at the top at this point.
Right. No, I agree. I think it's been talked about for many, many years about Survivor that being the alpha dog is certainly not always where you want to be. I am certainly a big proponent of Boston Rob's general gameplay being fundamentally unsound. I think big shock.
I thought you were going to say I'm a big proponent of Boston Rob's gameplay. I thought, what a fucking casual.
Quite the opposite. Like, I think it is a tremendous flaw to think I always want to be dictating what everyone's doing, and also I always need to be taking out the biggest threat from the other side. I think both of those are tremendously philosophically just flawed Survivor views on how to approach the game. But to go back to Zeke, yeah, I guess I do feel like he ultimately almost did have it coming. Like, I think it would take him playing like, I almost like to use, again, an extreme example, like a Kim Spradlin game where people are just so hypnotized from start to finish that they never see it. I feel like in specifically this cast, to go back to that idea yet again, I feel like Zeke is probably someone who is just going to come across as too shifty at a certain point. Like, I do understand him, I love the impulse of course this game is all about bonds and I want to create great bonds with people, but I do feel like we are getting to the point where, like you were saying, you don't always want to be the person who is viewed as the biggest priority, or, you know, who is viewed as the person who has all of the best bonds. Like, I think he's doing it in a way that people are seeing, and that's definitely not the way to be doing it. Yeah. But nonetheless, Zeke is going to be the one who is, at least this first vote, deciding which way this goes. I don't feel like we know enough about Zeke's relationships to really determine if he made ostensibly the right or wrong call. Like, I think it's unfair, I guess what I'm saying, is to say, oh, well, because David immediately just turned on him the following round, he made the wrong call.
So here's my question, then. It seemed like Zeke, at the point he chose to vote out Chris, he already knew after this he was gunning for David. Like, we see him say, we're still going to go after Jay, and then we're gonna go from there. But it seemed like he knew at some point this clash with David was going to happen. My question is, you know that everyone else sees Chris and his block as this big threat. So, you know, David is scared of it. Jess is scared of it. I imagine, like, what does Hannah have to gain from siding with Chris, right? Like, Hannah's never going to be on board with that group. Jay has no real reason to go with Chris from what we saw. So, like, why not keep Chris around? Take out David, who you seem to think you'll have to deal with at some point anyway, and then maybe pivot later at the point where you can vote out Chris, you have a majority, and now that majority has a very short window to turn on you before you just assume total control.
So what you mean is you can take the shot at David now because in so doing you are leaving in that trio that are still going to be such a pressing issue that people have to deal with them in the short term?
Yeah, and then when you get down to 8 or 7, you can round up the stragglers. You can get Hannah, you can get Will, you can... maybe Jay's gone at this point, but if he's still there, you can maybe get Jay. Like, Ken is going to be twisting in the wind if David's gone. Like, you can get these people together and get them to do what you want, and then they themselves, and they're this very badly coordinated group, need to gang up on you, and there just might not be time, even if there's the inclination, for that to happen.
Well, I think that would be the concern for me, is that there would be time, because if we think about David goes out now, and then we take out Chris and maybe Brett or Sunday, how good are you feeling about an endgame with where I would imagine you, Zeke, are now quite visibly the biggest target left on the board? You've dictated this big blindside of David and burnt a lot of political capital to make that happen, I would imagine, like really gotten a lot of people to come and see it your way. I would imagine, like we're seeing, that that's not going to go unnoticed. And I don't know how good I would feel about taking out a lot of the other big threats besides myself and leaving someone. I guess you would still have someone like Jay and Will. You could point to them even after taking out the Chris and Brett and Sunday, potentially taking out that entire trio. I still don't know how great I would feel if I'm looking at an endgame of like me and Adam and Hannah and Ken and Jess. Like, who's really got my best interest at heart there?
What? Who has his best interest at heart now?
I think, like, he could still feel like plenty of people do. Like, it seems like confessionals, he's saying, who I choose to put all of my trust and faith in right now is what's going to win or lose me the game, and making that decision the right way is totally paramount. I think the issue is that he went back and forth and just burned too many people.
Well, so I think he has Brett for now, although Brett seems savvy enough to turn on him eventually, right? And then he maybe has Sunday, like, via Brett by extension, but even that's kind of a loose connection. And if Brett's turning on him, Sunday probably is too. And then maybe Will you can make a case for, or Jay, but like, I like, in the present case, I don't see where that loyalty is coming from. And you could say, well, the way it turned out, like, his group stuck together, his group drew rocks for him, but I the fact that was even an option in the first place is kind of terrifying, right? Because it's, you know, if that had gone the other way, it would not have ended well for him. And as it happens, even now, even though Jess, who was one of his fiercest opponents on the other side, is now gone, there's no guarantee that Zeke is going to have any real power going forward.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to hear from Zeke entering that second tribal council about how confident he was that he was going to get that tie and that they were actually going to force rocks on his behalf. Because as we'll get to when we talk about that decision, I think that's, for people on both sides, to be fair, I don't know how confident anyone can realistically be in that scenario.
Right, so in the line that I'm thinking about, he sides with Chris. They know that David maybe has an idol, so they try and play around that somehow. But I imagine once Chris votes out Jess, let's say, right, David and Ken are still going to be big priorities. They know that the two of them are never going to be working with Chris, so they'll be next on the hit list. And Jay, I imagine, once he starts losing challenges, or if you think you can, like, use this window where he's not going to play his idol, you can maybe take him out. But there are going to be a few votes where you have these buffers. Like, no one's going to be coming after Zeke. Like, if the other side's coming after you, they're coming after Chris. Chris is not going to be coming for you for now, after you've shown your loyalty and once there are bigger threats on the other side. And so you have this time to work on these people on the outside. You can work on Hannah, you can work on Will, you can prep them so that when the moment comes, you can spring into action and turn things around on Chris. And there's not much he can do about it at that stage.
No, I mean, I do definitely like that idea. And, like, we certainly always talk about forcing lines and leaving in a big, tight trio of Chris, Brett, and Sunday could potentially be really appealing for down the line if you are in a scenario where you need to rally the troops. And even though they may not like you, please, you have to see that, like, we don't have a choice but to vote together here. I think leaving in big buffers makes that a lot easier than leaving in a bunch of goats. That being said, I would still feel like I, Zeke, would be viewed as the biggest target left in the game. How long in the timeline where I'm making these big flips so early can I realistically stay undercover, so to speak, even through, like, final six, final five?
Well, so you're not making big flips so early. You have to choose a side, and so whichever way you've gone, you're going to make some enemies on the other side, but that's unavoidable at this point. You have to make a choice. If he chooses the Chris side, then, like, okay, David's going to be mad at him. Maybe Hannah's mad at him. Okay,
well, Adam was the one who was saying Zeke is locked in with us. He's not going to go away during this first part.
Right, but as it happens, like we see in the second episode, Zeke and Adam, and this is something I actually wanted to ask you about, Zeke assumes Adam's going to be against him. We see him say in all of the chaos of Tribal, like, Adam isn't going to rest until I'm out of the game, which it seemed like a big turnaround based on how close the two of them were at the start, or seemed to be at the start.
Yeah, no, it seemed like David really just hit the... He said at a certain point, Zeke is too... I think both of them realized the other one is just too on to me. This is too critical of a vote. I have to devote all of my resources to making sure that this one goes my way. And I think David just had ultimately... the David, Ken, and Jess trio had way more swing over, way more sway over Adam than Zeke even realistically thought he could, you know, that Zeke himself could. I think Zeke probably had no real issue chalking Adam up as kind of a lost cause. And I think that's what, to get further into that, I thought it was really astounding, and something that is going very underreported this week, is that Zeke, as we've touched on, was able to get Brett and Sunday and Jay and Will to go to rocks for him.
Yeah, that's... Well, you could say the other side as well. Like, it's great that David managed to get Adam to go to rocks for him, too. So it's, you know... Yeah. The fact that we even have a rock draw in the first place, regardless of who was behind both sides, is kind of amazing. Let's touch on that in a second. Let's talk about Adam quickly, though, because I think Adam, we see this scene where he gets a letter from home and so on, and we're meant to, you know, they're building up the storyline, I think, in advance of next episode. But strategically, Adam is someone who, you know, he has an idol. He was being called out a few weeks ago for the by Jay and Taylor, and then there's lots of stuff going on. And yet Adam, it just seemed like he wasn't really relevant to what happened in this episode. And I'm not saying he should have tried to make himself relevant, but like, it's just strange to me. You think he would be at the center of attention either for good reasons or for bad reasons, and yet he's just nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, you would think so, at least based on what we've seen from the merge. He did have the confessional, though, saying, my move right now is to just lay back and let Hannah do a lot of wheeling and dealing, and I think that is spot on. I think he seemed to recognize that he was quite active, and that people were noticing right around the merge time. It seemed like, at least to me, that his mind was made up. I mean, he went to rocks for his side. I think he was totally right in this point. You know, we can potentially talk about whether to play that idol or not later on if he thinks it might go to rocks, but I have no issue with Adam totally hanging back at this point.
Yeah, but even that partnership with Hannah wasn't really made explicit, right? Like, it's not... If you would ask someone... at the start of this episode, do you think Adam and Hannah are this really tight pair? I don't know how many people would have said yes.
Right, I would have thought that Zeke and Hannah were probably a tighter pair than Adam and Hannah. I would have said that probably could have, if push came to shove, swing Hannah.
Or Adam and Zeke even, but apparently that's certainly not the case anymore.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, is it felt like to me, even entering this week, that Zeke was like everyone's best friend.
Right, and I guess whichever side he chose, he would have to burn some bridges along the way. But it does seem like it's like, how successful can it really be when coming out of the episode, you're still in this very dangerous position? I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying that Zeke deserves no credit. I've been maybe more critical of Zeke than I should be, but I know. Just I don't know what the plan is going forward. And I think, to his credit, like, I don't think he should know or really can know what the plan is at this stage, because everything is moving so fast. And this is a debate that gets brought up a lot nowadays, but do you think we are in like this postmodern era of Survivor where a lot of the assumptions that we were making ourselves like 8 seasons ago just don't really apply anymore? Because we started at what might have been the tail end of that previous era, right? Where you had South Pacific and One World, where both times it was very clearly divided along tribal lines. You had these like strong figures leading these alliances, and it seemed very optimistic to think that anyone was really going to deviate from that. Then we had Philippines, where everything was just nuts. Karamoan, where I think the returning player dynamics made things a bit more in line, but then within that, you had a lot of craziness going on. Blood vs. Water was almost more typical to a degree, right? But even that, you had some big moments. Then after that, you had Tony just being Tony, doing his thing. Stay tuned for more of that, hopefully, at some point. Then Salman Del Sur was crazy as well. What's the part was, yeah, we can write that one off, right? I mean, it's just in there as like the black sheep of the family. But then Cambodia obviously was insane. Koh Rong, lots of stuff going on there too. And now this seems like the rule rather than the exception at this point.
Oh, I totally agree. I think this is a macro version of what we saw back in the early days when I think Rob Cesternino and Johnny Fairplay going back to back, kind of making it socially acceptable to flip on people. I think we're seeing the super extreme group version of that. These voting blocks or hashtag trust clusters that we're now seeing. I think we are totally in a new era of Survivor. I think it is, frankly, I think it's long overdue. I don't know how it took 15 years essentially to get to this point, but regardless, I am loving that we are here. I think it is because we are seeing, as you just listed, so many seasons go in a row. I think it's really Philippines and then Tony and Natalie Anderson to credit where they really cemented, like, this is fine. Like, flipping on people is totally fine. It can win you the game. Playing aggressively is nothing to be scared of. It is often the right idea. I think seeing, honestly, we'll talk more about this when we talk about the Rocks themselves. I think seeing these big, exciting moments and Jeff harping on big moves, just makes people on future players, on future seasons, excuse me, more inclined to do this stuff. I don't think it's going anywhere. And as I've said before, I am totally in love with the current state of Survivor strategy. Are you on board with that? Do you think that we are in a new era of Survivor gameplay?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope this doesn't slow down. Based on some of the casting for next season, I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon. But going ahead from that, you know, it might almost be fun at this point to have like an old school season where we kind of keep expecting things to happen and then they don't. But I think we would get bored of that pretty quickly. So I like that this is a new measuring point that everything gets compared to.
Right, let's save our old school season wish list for the Big Brother house, and just, even though that's obviously never, ever, ever going to happen. Yeah, all right. I guess before we skip into a lot, you know, dive into the second tribal council, let's not gloss over something that I definitely wanted to get to, which is just parting thoughts on Chris in general and the role that Chris played in this season. Because for me, I feel like Chris was the type that they probably, based on him being a lower energy person, as you described him, Dom, very meanly a couple of weeks ago, and an early juror, I feel like he's someone who traditionally might have gotten the short end of the stick edit-wise. I feel like we saw a lot from Chris and had a lot of reason to be believing in Chris for as long as he was out there, essentially.
Yeah, I think Chris, like, his edit was maybe less than the sum of his parts, if that makes sense. Like, we were told everyone's a bit fearful of Chris, and he has this taste for vengeance, he wants to go after Jess, and he's going to be, like, in control and making moves and so on, and then it felt kind of muted when the axe finally... And I think part of that, and one reason I feel really sorry for him, is, like, normally... Right, he would get voted out, and I think that episode by itself, regardless of what changes would have been made, would be a decent episode of Survivor, right? Like, all the pundits would talk about it, and it would be the focus on, like, Reddit or whatever for the next few days, and he would get his week in the sun like every other boot would, and I think the reception to Chris would be pretty positive. But instead, literally the moment after he gets booted, we go into this new episode, which ends up being this absolute barnstormer, and everyone's just talking about that now. No one even cares that Chris got voted out, so it's...
Right, it's Andrea and Kara Moen all over again, where she leaves with the idol in her pocket, but then the next morning, everyone's just talking about Dawn and Brenda.
Yeah, and he gets his way, right? Like, Jess follows him to Ponderosa, not in the way that he would have intended, but she ends up joining him there. But Stephen was making an interesting point about this, because... Whenever you have these personal conflicts that take up a lot of the story time, so in this case, Chris and Jess, it never seems to end well for either of them. So even the person who ends up on the right side of that, they usually end up joining that person there on the jury a few votes later. It's rare that someone is so consumed by this personal conflict and then they go on to win. Like you could say maybe like Natalie with John or whatever, but I think those examples are few and far between.
No, I definitely do agree with that. And the follow-up to that, I believe, as Stephen and Rob were talking about it, is that could easily be David and Zeke now going on the heels of this episode. Do you feel like that's in play? That what do you think the odds are, actually? Let me get some kind of number range from you on one of David or Zeke leaving next week.
I think it's certainly between 0 and 100%.
Way to go out there.
I think so... I wonder now, like, let's say Jay doesn't win immunity. Is he just a lock to be safe somehow?
That is interesting. I mean, Jay is probably the new Joey Amazing, where Jay Amazing? Where Jay, I can't, all right, yeah. we'll work on it. But but where him having the necklace versus not having the necklace completely changes the game dynamics, because everyone's so aware of this could be one of the last chances to get rid of Jay. But also everyone knows that, so this is the time to blindside someone.
Despite the whole Peruvian Aussie thing, I don't think he's seen as quite in that league yet. Like, he's not someone who you think is going to win the next five challenges in a row. So you think you're going to have another chance to take him out. But I don't know, because it feels like he ended up on the right side, whether intentionally or by accident, or just by luck of the draw with the Rocks this week. So if that majority sits together, and who even knows if it will at this point, then he should be okay. And even if it doesn't, are they going to go after him as opposed to, like, you know, as opposed to Zeke or someone else from that group? I don't think they will.
Yeah, I mean, it will be really, really interesting. I think to go back to the initial question, I actually feel like I would think the number is actually kind of low, just based on, I don't feel like this story is totally done, this battle between Zeke and David, although obviously, as we've seen, a lot can happen in, you know, over the course of 1 hour of Survivor. I still feel like they're both probably, much more likely than not, both going to survive this next week.
Yeah, I think now that, that David's idol is out of play, although knowing him, he'll just find another one again the next morning. Knowing that, I think whichever side takes control is going to go after that, that ringleader of the other side. So you just cut the head off the dragon, get that out of the way. And Adam and Jay, I think, both have reasons to keep those idols very close to their chest at this point. Like, unless Adam, for some reason, thinks everyone's suddenly coming after him, why would he play that on Ken, let's say, or David, just to maybe buy another round, given how flexible things have been so far?
No, I totally agree. Just a quick sidebar on that. I think Adam's idol, you know, say what you want about him ultimately having to draw a rock here. I feel like being results-oriented and knowing that even if it is rocks, it's not going to go your way, you know, it's not going to be bad for you 5 out of 6 times. I'm fine with, generally speaking, sitting on the idol. And I think, more to the point, Adam has done a great job with the idol just by, say it with me, everyone, keeping it to himself. No one knows about Adam's idol. I think certainly after he just drew a rock, no one's going to have a real reason to believe that he could have one. I feel like that is right where you want to be at this point in the game. I feel like, if Adam was still getting a more positive edit and had not been kind of thrown under the bus, I would say, right around the merge time, I would feel like Adam might be in the best position in the game if I had more reason to believe that he could do well with the jury vote. I know that we talked plenty about Adam already, and I'm sure we will talk more about him later. But I am, just to wrap up on it, loving so far where Adam has been with the idol and all of his priorities in that department. And Jay, I think, is going to be interesting, by the way, just going forward with the idol. I'm guessing he's going to play it the next time that he's vulnerable.
It would be kind of fun if Jay ends up just, I don't even want to say stumbling his way to win, but just somehow winning after, like, David is obsessed with going after Zeke. Chris is obsessed with going after Jess. And all the time, Jay is just like sitting there, letting all this carnage unfold around him, just somehow ending up as the winner eventually.
Well, that's what I feel. I was thinking, whether it's someone like Jay, it could be someone like Hannah, or even someone like Ken, your world-famous BB-18 gif of the Mario Party, everyone, the bumper balls, them all just falling off and Luigi standing there motionless and winning. I feel like that could potentially be equally relevant for Survivor.
Yeah, my gif, by the way, but the point is well taken.
Okay. Well, you should go ahead and Google it. You and people at home right now, just Google how to pronounce .gif, and we can just leave it at that. Whatever Google says, I think we can all be on board with. All right. I don't know. I haven't checked it myself. It could easily be Dom's way. I don't know what Google's gonna put out there. Dom, are you Googling it?
It's like the whole Guy versus Jim debate. Yeah. But to tie this back to what I was thinking about before, there's going to be some point at which all of this craziness simmers down a little bit, and we're looking towards the end game. Some group like locks into place and starts moving forward. So a good example would be the Philippines, right, where there's all of this craziness going on, and then at the final eight, Malcolm and Denise start thinking that actually we need to lock something in and have something more secure. They approach Penner. He famously turns him down, maybe cost himself $1 million in the process there, and they end up going to the infamous Mike Scoop and Lisa instead. I imagine something similar is going to happen here, but you need to know when that's going to be, or else all of your assumptions get thrown off course. So, like, if you're thinking, I need to draw rocks, because if the other side gets a majority here, I'm done. There's no way in. There's no cracks that I can exploit. Then that's a good argument for drawing rocks. On the other hand, if things still are up in the air, then you absolutely don't want to draw rocks, because that's a much more direct way for you to leave the game, when otherwise you might not be in the crosshairs anytime soon.
Right, and I think that's going to be the big question for a lot of people in this vote, and they seem to, as they were given the opportunity to, you know, if the eight of you can come to a unanimous decision, then we won't even have to draw rocks. And they all seem to be on board that, like, none of us want to be drawing rocks for these other people. But I also think, you know, on the heels of, most famously probably Cochran, that the flipping to avoid rocks doesn't tend to go well for people. And I think there is a huge, at least if I was out there, I'd be very nervous about the possibility of, I don't want to be the guy who turns his back on what would have been the dominant alliance the rest of the game going through.
Yeah. So just quickly on that. So when they end up about to draw rocks and it becomes clear to everyone that this is what's going to happen, is it possible for someone to say, what if we arrange so that Zeke and Hannah draw rocks instead? Right, and whichever one of them draws the wrong rock is the one we're all going to agree goes home. Because that way, it's the two people who got voted for who end up having to draw, which seemed like the much more like obvious thing. And none of the people here end up having to risk their own futures in the game for something which they never even signed up for.
I'm not on board with that. I think that Rocks works the way it is because it is so much at stake. If you are unwilling, like if you insist that this will be a tie, you are going to be the one who is at risk here. Where right, I don't think people would force all the ties all the time if it was just the two people that were involved in the tie drawing a rock. Who cares?
Yeah, they would. But given this is the first case where this could happen, right? Do you think it makes sense to try and make that happen?
I mean, production would never, that would never, ever, ever fly. If we do a Riva.
You don't think?
No chance. Absolutely not. If I'm involved, I don't think they would ever, ever do it, especially after, I am sure, people were getting rules clarifications all day about what happens if this happens, what happens if this happens. They can't be telling them one thing and then on the fly change it. And secondly, if I'm production, absolutely not. You cannot do this. The people who got votes are safe.
What if they informally arrange it? Because you can't just declare the people who got votes are safe when you're giving them this out of, if the eight of you agree, that person goes home, right? You can work within that constraint to make this happen.
Okay, but it's not if the eight of you agree that one of the two should leave. That's completely different, in my opinion.
Right, but no, they are doing that. They're literally doing exactly that. They're just introducing this process beforehand.
So you're saying they should get to the point of, okay, so this is what I think would be in bounds for me if you really want to do this, if you know it's going to Rocks, if you bring your own rocks from the beach, and once you get to that double tie revote, you say, okay, now it's time, someone take off their sock or take off their hat, and we'll draw one of these two rocks, and we are all on board to say, okay, we will unanimously vote to agree to eliminate whoever gets the bad rock. And you bring your own rocks, that's fine. There is no way production is giving them rocks to draw for Hannah and Zeke.
So the fun thing would be, okay, let's say this happens. I assume it's not going to be binding, right? Like, Jeff, as you say, I'm going to sign up for this. So you make this happen, and then whoever's on the losing side, whoever's on the losing side could just object. And, like, that, see, if you're production, that's the perfect outcome, right? It's so much more drama. It's so, it's wonderful.
I feel like that might be another situation where we could require Jeff coming out after the episode with like the chalkboard going through how all of this went down, just like a public service announcement.
Yeah,
that is. I mean, I don't feel like I don't feel like the Rocks tiebreaker needs fixing to get to the larger point. I suppose for me, I feel like it is perfect the way it is. I know we have plenty more to talk about with the Rocks and how it specifically went down here, but I do not feel that the system is broken at all. I think it is the ultimate incentive to keep people from forcing ties all the time, and I think ties are almost across the board bad for Survivor until it's the very, very end game. And like maybe forcing like a fire tie for someone could be cool. All right. So I guess let's get into, I guess one thing we should certainly mention is the scene in the second reward challenge between Zeke and Brett, where they have become drinking buddies, winning all of these rewards together. They not only bond over that, but they also bond over Brett coming out to Zeke. He is, in fact, gay himself. This was a great scene, and as they brought up again on Know It Alls, all of the kind of like super contrived, oh, this generation means this, and being a millennial means this, is worth it for this scene, where we really
got to explore.
Do you disagree with that?
I do. It was a great scene. Certainly not disagreeing with that. But I think when you undermine that whole... Because there is a very real point there. As Brett says, and Zeke says too, the reception of gay people now versus back then is very different. Some way to go. But it's that is a good insight. It's something you want to hear people talk about. It's something which you don't often hear in the context of a reality TV game show, right? So it's refreshing to hear a serious issue like that being explored in that detail. And I think you undermine that when you preface it with Jeff every single episode saying, oh, well, Hannah made this comment at Tribal. Is that a millennial thing to do? Or it places it on the same level in a way which I think undermines everything you're trying to do with that scene.
Okay, I guess what I mean is I feel like Jeff constantly going back to that being the theme of the season, it validates all of those instances more for me when it is eventually going to pay off in legitimately meaningful ways down the line, and we have had that theme brought up before on the season.
But you can have it pay off just by having the scene itself play out because it's a good scene. You don't need to put all of this contrived nonsense in advance of that, which, as I said, I think only serves to detract from it.
I mean, I generally am on board with let's cool it way the fuck down with the, you know, beating the theme of the season into people's heads. I particularly don't like it when Jeff is adamant that it's this versus that and you need to be with your team and you're taking on this other lifestyle or whatever. I think that's horrible for the game and generally pretty bad for, like, the overall narrative of the show. I do see what you're saying, though. Like, it cheapens. Do you feel like it's cheapening this scene because it's we've had so much force-fed millennials versus Gen X drama?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So
that's fair.
You think about some other cases, like the whole, like, white collar versus blue collar versus no collar thing. That would not have been redeemed if there had been, like, an actually sociologically valid scene of like class differences being explored on Survivor, right? Like, it's you don't rescue a bad idea by showing the one instance where it works on organically by itself.
Yeah, okay, so let's get more into this second half of the episode, and let's get into something we talked a little bit about, but just in passing, but this scene of Hannah and Zeke off at the well, where she really does tip to Zeke that David, you know, he's coming after you right now, not on purpose, of course, she's not doing this deliberately, but Zeke clearly gets the right idea. What did you make of all this, and Hannah's role in this in particular?
I think it's funny how she might accidentally have guaranteed her own safety here, because she freezes up in this scene with Zeke. Zeke now knows that Hannah's not on his side. Therefore, if you're trying to avoid David's idol, maybe the smartest thing to do is to vote for Hannah, because if you vote for Ken, maybe there's a chance David gives it to Ken, or there's a chance he gives it to Jess. You vote for Hannah, he's almost certainly not going to realize that's what's going on. So you vote for Hannah, and now it's a tie, so Hannah is safe. Right. And everyone else is drawing rocks. So she, like, accidentally guaranteed that she would be safe, which very heads up play from Hannah, I think.
It's strong, strong, strong stuff. I mean, if she goes on to win this season, then it will have been, of course, just great.
Oh, yes.
The most heads up play that we've ever seen. Look at the brilliant move to force the tie on herself. Yeah. I also thought it was interesting. We should talk about Hannah being certain, of course, that Zeke is going to be targeting her and that David should be playing his idol on her. I feel like she probably would have been feeling that way anyway, as would I.
Yeah.
Like, I certainly would be. I'm sure David and Hannah in particular way too much shit for being nervous wrecks out there, because I would totally be the exact same way. I would be a disaster in these kind of situations.
I would not be out there long enough for me to become a nervous wreck. I would not be in the game at this point. But, yeah, I'm not sure if Hannah made this brilliant soul read, or if she was just nervous anyway, and of course she was going to think it was coming on her. Either way, it worked out, but I think that it does make sense, right? Like, if you're Zeke, now that you know Hannah's not going to work with you, or you know at least, why not vote for her and play around the idol as best you can?
Yeah, and it seems like especially Hannah's a lost cause. We got a confessional from Zeke. It seemed like him saying essentially something to that effect, right?
Although, also, given that you think Adam's on that other side now, too, why not vote for Adam?
I guess there is some concern that Adam could have an idol. Like, I think it is still much more likely. Maybe he's not. Maybe that's not why. Maybe I'm only bringing that up because I know Adam does have an idol.
Right. Or maybe
Hannah's an easier person to get people on board with for whatever reason. I'm really not sure. It probably goes back to the classic Edgardo logic of she's just not going to have an idol played on her and she doesn't have one herself. So I just need these votes to go through.
Yeah,
that would be my question. And one thing that I meant to bring up when we were talking about Zeke earlier, but it pertains to that conversation with Hannah, where he clearly picks up in the moment, oh my God, she is completely turned. This is not good. I feel like Zeke, one thing we've seen constantly from him, regardless of the situation, is he seems to really handle adversity well and stay focused and stay cool and composed in the moment, at least as far as I've been able to tell.
Well, you had that scene of him blowing up on Hannah, which we debated at some length a few weeks ago. But yeah, otherwise, it seemed like he's kind of keeping his head about him, which...
That was, to go back to that, it's because he wanted to stay cool. And he was like, I don't want to get into this. I mean, want to not have this conversation right now.
Hannah was not playing her part that great either. But I wonder if that's almost unnerving to everyone else, where, like, you see someone who seems so at ease, so self-confident, and they have this sense of purpose. They know what they're doing. That makes him seem like more of a threat, maybe. Whereas David, who is constantly going over in his head every possible thing that could go wrong, like, he's neurotic and that's unsettling, and maybe you trust him a little bit less because of that. But he seems less threatening in a very narrow sense. Is that you following?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar to the other things that we've talked about between Zeke and David, where it seems like they're just emotionally connecting with people in different ways. But let's get into. One thing I actually thought was really interesting that I've heard a lot of people floating around is when they were in the middle of this tribal council, there was a ton of whispering going on the whole time. And at a certain point, Ken's name got floated out there. And as David decided to play his idol, Adam spoke up and said, hey, they were talking about voting for Ken. You should play it on Ken. He does, in fact, play it on Ken. Did you think that this was a design play? Because I had a lot of people ask me, hey, was this something they did on purpose?
I would love to believe that this was intentional. And I think it was, insofar as maybe they just had the standard agreement of, okay, if someone asks that we don't trust, we're going to say it's this person instead of the actual target. I don't think they were thinking that far ahead to, when we are about to go to Rocks, we therefore want, you know, that's going to be a possibility. So if that's what they were thinking, then that's incredible. And yeah, right. Hats off to whoever, and hats off to Sunday in particular for playing that part very well. But I think that was just more like, Hannah's asking Sunday the question. Sunday doesn't really trust her, so she throws out a decoy name, hoping that Hannah's going to go with that. I don't think there's any like wider planning involved, although if there was, I would love to hear about it.
Right. I would also love it if that was some kind of, oh, if they end up using an idol, let's make sure they don't use it on the right person. I am with you. I feel like that was more a, oh, well, a 5-4-1 vote is just as good as a 6-4 vote, so there's no point giving them the real target.
Well, so from Adam's perspective, though, like you overhear, or do you think it's even right to call it overhearing? Because it's taking place in front of you. There's no attempt being made to hide it, really. So Hannah asked Sunday who the vote's going to be on. And if I'm recording it right, Sunday says Ken. You're Adam. You see that. So either Sunday is being incredibly careless and this is some amazing mistake, or this information is not absolutely reliable and Sunday is just trying to mislead Hannah, in which case there is no way that idol should be going on Ken.
Well, the thing I would probably think is this is a crazy tribal council. I could see Sunday just wanting more people voting the way that she's voting. I would at least buy it in this tribal council a lot more than any other.
Although, so let's say you think you have 5 votes locked in, right? You have Brett, Sunday, Zeke, and Will and Jay, presumably. That's another question. Where does David's alliance think Will and Jay are? Are they just locked in with Zeke? If so, then, like, if you have 5 votes, it actually doesn't matter where any of the others go. If you misdirect Hannah's vote, then it's like 5-4-1, and you still win that cycle. So it's fine.
It seemed like they thought that they were just resigned to it being 5-5 at best, and they all thought that maybe someone might flip, but I don't think anyone thought that they were getting 6 votes for sure.
But in that case then, so it's, Hannah asked Sunday the question. Sunday presumably doesn't think there's any chance of Hannah actually flipping, right? So she's just going to throw any name out there, hoping that Hannah's going to deviate from the group, and that's all they need. They don't need Hannah to actually line up with him in any way.
No, I agree. I think that is the most likely scenario, but I do think it's possible that Sunday, I don't think she was being truthful. Like, obviously she knew the vote was not on Ken, and I think you are right that they were just trying to misdirect any vote they could so that 5 votes would be a majority. But I do also think it is very possible that Sunday thought, Hannah genuinely wants to get on board with us. Like, we've certainly seen weirder things out of Hannah at tribal councils.
Yeah, I could see Sunday specifically thinking that.
Right.
But it's this weird game of telephone, though, right? So you have this conversation between Sunday and Hannah, which is taking place under some kind of pretenses. You don't even know which ones. Adam overhears that, tells that to David. And now David has to decide if he's going to give his idol to that person. And it's so messy. Like, so for as much as we can say, oh, that's bad information, you can't trust that, I can't really fault David for just giving his idol to Ken, right? Like, just, he has to make some kind of call. He went with that, didn't work out, but okay, fine.
I feel like, while I do certainly understand the merit in, I certainly wouldn't feel like Adam is lying to me. Like, I wouldn't feel like obviously he's not trying to get me to burn my idol. I would think he would know what he was talking about. I still personally feel like, unless I have a very, very good reason to feel like it's on Ken, and maybe he did, maybe Adam was being really adamant about it, and that's why it's called being adamant. Get it? But I feel like I would probably use it on myself. I feel like if I'm David there, especially if I feel like we are potentially going to Rocks, I'm just idling myself.
How long have you been storing that one up for?
I just thought of it just now. I never even thought of it ever in my life, which is almost more surprising than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, speaking of Adam and idols, do you feel like once he sees David play his idol on Ken, that he should consider just idling himself or anyone else and just ensuring his own safety? Presumably for me, I would, again, to go back to it, I would be pretty selfish with my idol here, I think, this round.
Well, so let's say you think it's going to Rocks, and by playing your idol, even if you're 100% sure that it's not going to be on you, in which case you would, I guess you'd give it to someone else. But bear with me here. So you think it's not going to be you. You can play your idol on yourself, guarantee that you won't have to draw a rock, and that the odds are generally going to go in your alliance's favor. Do you think that trade-off's worth it versus having this idol that, as you said, no one knows about, which is a rarity in Survivor, and having this like this silver bullet to use down the line?
Yeah, let me lay this out really slowly to make sure that I get all this in here, because I feel like I want to make clear that I am acknowledging the risk of this may not end up being even a rock draw. This vote just may go the opposite of my way, and then there's a new majority in town that I can't do much about. I also recognize if it goes to rocks, I am likely going to be one of the people picking the rock, and I have a 1 in 6 chance of just leaving the game with an idol in my pocket. All of those downsides being in play, I really think there's a lot of merit in still sitting on that idol. There, it will be totally covered for the rest of the game going forward. I think there is, you know, a 10 to 15% chance that you leave that night, sure. I feel like your just equity to win the game goes up so substantially when you can get through this round with your idol.
Yeah, let's get into the choice of targets now. So let's say you're Zeke. You know that, firstly, there's an idol on the other side, so you have to be cognizant of that, and that's maybe an argument for voting for someone like Hannah, who is less likely to get that than Jess or Ken. But you also have to think, if it does deadlock and it goes to rocks, we want to induce someone to flip from the other side, and we want to stop our own side from flipping. So we want an appealing target to be up there, so that, you know, if I'm a waverer on Team Zeke, I want to think, okay, if I stick with Team Zeke, at least I'm taking someone out of the game that I really want gone if the vote goes my way. Mm-hmm. But then also, we want to target someone on the other side who people on that side would be willing to flip on. So you can either say, we're going to target one of the core members and dare one of the people on the fence to flip, or you can target one of the people on the fence and dare the core members to put their necks on the line to defend that person.
I think that's all totally right and all points a lot towards Hannah. I think a couple other things are to go back to the idea of forcing lines again. If this vote does go your way and Hannah leaves, I think it is good. It is a good thing for you to have a probably tight-looking foursome of Ken, David, Jess, and Adam there, and you only have 5 other people left, and we don't have a choice. As sketchy as Zeke may look for the time being, we have to break up this foursome, because otherwise they will force rocks with us next round.
Huh. Well, I hadn't even thought about that angle, but that's...
By comparison, Hannah could easily swing over and flip some millennials and make a new majority and take me, Zeke, out at Final 9.
So it seems to me you have David, Jess, and Ken, and that's the big Gen X core three. But then you also have Adam and Hannah, who seem to be pretty close. So whoever you decide to target, you're kind of locking in that group is going to go to the wall to defend itself, right? Like if you vote for Hannah, I think Adam is going to rocks to defend Hannah, probably. Although we can maybe debate that. You vote for Jess, let's say. Ken and David are going to rocks to defend Jess, but maybe Adam and Hannah wouldn't be on board with that. So you have to decide like who you're really trying to appeal to. And I think I almost like voting for one of those core people more, because like for Adam, let's say, you can imagine him as the cerebral superfan type. He doesn't want to put his fate in the hands of chance. He's going to want to, you know, flip over or whatever. And then Hannah as well, being as neurotic as she is she really going to want to go to rocks when there's a safer option available? Whereas David, like he seems, and I think this maybe is a misconception about David, because he seems like he's all over the place and he's not trustworthy or whatever. But I think from the perspective of someone like Ken, he is trustworthy. Like now that he has his core group, he will go so far as giving them his idols and really putting himself out there to defend them. So I think David would draw rocks and he knows what the stakes are here. Whereas I think Adam and Hannah would be more open to that kind of appeal.
Right. I think you are probably right that the number one priority for Zeke is let's forget about rocks. I have my 5 solid. Let's get one of these people to flip, because they should have realistically no business being interested in drawing a rock for Hannah or for David or whoever on that side. And I think you're probably right that the leading candidates to flip on that seem to be Hannah and Adam, to be flipping on the Gen Xers versus the other way around. But still, that being said, I really, the more I think about it, if I'm Zeke, I feel like Hannah might be one of the better people to be taking out just if I had my way, no matter what, entering this round, because she's such a wild card, and I think so many people could view her as so useful.
Yeah, so you're essentially weighing up the increased odds of the idol being used on the right person versus maybe the increased odds of someone flipping if it goes to Rocks. So from the other side, though, they go for Zeke. You know, Zeke is a head honcho. You want to take him down. That all makes sense. However, right, you have Will and Jay, who seem to be on the, like, floating on the edges here. You have Brett and Sunday, who seem to be solidly with Zeke. Although, maybe not Sunday so much. I'm not quite sure. So, let's say you're David. You're trying to think, who do we put the head on? You're fairly confident that there's no idol in play, right? You know that Jay has one, but unless you're targeting Jay, that isn't going to be as relevant. So I was thinking, maybe, what if you target Sunday and you essentially dare Will, who presumably doesn't have any real reason to care about Sunday? Like, okay, if you go to Rocks here, you're risking a future in a game that you care strongly about just to say Sunday, who means nothing to you. Like, are you really going to sign up for that?
Right. I think that's the more interesting angle is, if you are David, and I think this comes down a lot to, if I know I have five votes with me, if I know that worst case is we are going to Rocks and I'm going to play this idol, and we are, even if I don't hit with the idol, we're going to be drawing fewer rocks potentially, and we are opening the door for people to swing to our side. I think you were spot on that I would, first of all, really want Zeke drawing a rock if I felt like that was the worst case scenario. Yeah. I'm going to make sure that Zeke is not the person who is safe from the vote. And more, and to your point, I think whether you go for Sunday or Will, I think Jay or Will would be fine with flipping on Sunday if it meant not drawing a rock. Jay's immune. Yeah, or vice versa. Sorry, go ahead.
Because Jay, from what we saw, is actually pretty close with Sunday. There was some speculation that Sunday was the one who tipped Jay off that he didn't need to use his idol in the previous vote.
Sunjay?
Jesus Christ. Very good, very good. But that seems like the more obvious line to me. Like, target Will. Like, Will seems like the person you really want to go for there.
I think that's probably right. I think you're probably right. I think Will is, if you're David and you get to handpick who leaves this round, if Zeke is not an option and we want Zeke in there drawing rocks, where if we feel like, I don't know, like, it depends, where someone, if you flip or you end up drawing rocks, I think Will is the person where I would probably be most happy with my side's votes being on. I feel like you are opening the door for a flip there, and also Will's not the end of the world for the person who's going to be safe if we do end up going to Rocks here. Did you feel like, I don't believe the answer is going to be yes, but just to go through it, do you feel like Jay should be doing anything but sitting on his idol when he has the necklace, or should he just be laughing his way through this incredible tribal council?
So one idea is, if you know that everyone else knows that you have it, why not try and perform some kind of bluff, right? Like, you could, I don't even know how it would work, but like, you could, yeah. So actually, here's a thought. Okay. Jay has an idol, right? He also has a necklace. If he just gives a necklace to someone, they're not going to vote for Jay, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that they coordinate voting for Jay knowing that he has an idol and knowing that he just gave up one of his forms of protection. So that's a way to cover yourself pretty perfectly. Now, obviously it does mean Jay would end up drawing a rock if it goes to a tie, so he would have to use his idol to go against that. But if you think the stakes are that high, then maybe it's worth thinking about.
I don't think the stakes are that high for Jay. I don't feel like he is someone, especially when he has the necklace, who should be doing anything other than watching all of the fireworks explode and sitting there being the cool guy who has an idol in his back pocket. I don't think I would be, especially if I didn't have any intentions of playing it, I would try to keep the attention on my idol as minimal as possible. I don't want to make big spectacles out of it and then sit on it, because I want to be able to do that later.
And likewise for David. If you're David, you know you're playing your idol for someone else, or you know you're willing to at least. Why not, before the vote happens, just make your idol public and give it to Ken, let's say. So now Ken has an idol. If the vote originally was on Ken, then they have to scramble to try and find something else, and you can read into that based on what they're doing publicly. They're not going to switch the vote to you. Like, it's very hard to coordinate that in the moment. And it could also be like a double bluff kind of thing where Ken's going to give the idol back to you. So it seems like that could effectively cover two people.
Right? No, I think I feel like we've talked about this idea I don't remember when it was.
So it was Tony and LJ, where like we thought, okay, if Tony shows his idol, gives it to someone else. If LJ shows his idol, gives it to someone else, that covers four people, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. If you wait until tribal council and then you go in wearing the idol and then you give it to someone else in the middle of the tribal council, I think it's going to be very, very hard for people to end up pulling the trigger on any of the four of you in that Tony and LJ in that situation.
Yeah.
So I think that is something I hope that we see down the line. I'm guessing that anyone willing to do that, it would across the board have to come with the contingency of, incidentally, this is my idol. You will hold it for this tribal council. It will be returned to me. Like, I don't think anyone really thinks that the idol would be changing hands or be played on that person that round. But are you really willing to get, you know, to risk your entire survivor life on that?
Right. Like, if, let's say the vote was on Ken and David gives the idol to Ken. Ken plays his part, looks suitably startled, right? You're going to think, holy shit, we need to do something about this. Okay, maybe Zeke is just has that much steel in him, and he can say, it's fine, stick to the plan, nothing's going to change. But someone's going to waver, right? Like, someone's going to get worried. And especially, like, if you think that person's getting idled and you're on the fence, you might think, I'm going to flip now. And like, if you're Will, let's say, you might think, well, if this vote's going down the pan anyway, I'm going to flip now, try and ingratiate myself with that side and be the guy who made that happen.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's something it seems like we're being set up in the next week preview is, oh, hey, is Will going to flip over? To me, it seems like if he was even considering it, he would have done it already instead of risking a rock to then go and do it and burn half the tribe. But just to quickly go back to it, to the idea of like bluffing and flashing your idol at tribal councils, if you were out there playing Survivor, or at least if I was out there playing Survivor, I would want my side's votes basically always going on. Whoever the other side is telling me is going to have the idol played on them, or whoever is flashing, hey, I'm going to play the idol on myself tonight, good, do it. Make them do it. Put your votes on that, and whoever that is, because way more often than not, they end up not playing the idol on the person that they're putting the big spectacle towards. Yeah. All right, let's get into how this rock draw ends up actually going down. We do have this deadlock. We are not able to come to a unanimous decision. Unfortunately, Dom, they did not think to bring the sock and the rocks from the beach to draw between Zeke and Hannah with them. So we are going to have, we have Ken safe, we have Jay safe, we have Zeke safe, and we have Hannah safe. Everyone else is drawing a rock. I was on the edge of my seat, and I want to say, like, before we get into like all of the fallout from this, this is the, I mean, I can't remember the last time I was this excited waiting for like a Survivor outcome.
Yeah. And I, as I said, my mind was flashing back to that Adam comment at the challenge. And I thought, come on, not like this, you know, Adam, he doesn't deserve it. At least, you know, especially like, wouldn't it, it would be so poetic if that happened the week before the family challenge, right? Like that would be like the same thing, obviously on a much more meaningful scale, but like with Joe a few seasons ago saying like, all I care about is making the family visit, and then gets cut short just before the family visit.
Right. It would be like Cochran. I remember when we talked to him about South Pacific, he was like, and I lost the round before the family visit. So like Jeff Probst was in the back telling my mom that I'd just been eliminated. It was really, really funny. But yeah, that would have been super brutal. I'm sure they would have let, you know, if Adam had been eliminated, they would have let him get some word from back home for sure. Yeah. Well, let's get into, of course, as everyone listening this far surely already knows, Gen X Jessica is the one who ends up finding the black rock here. Does not end up being overly thrilled about that. She just kind of collapses into tears and seems to stay that way through the final words. And honestly, who can blame her? No one wants to be, you know, sent out of the game when they didn't get any votes cast against themselves and they were just being a team player and the odds were that low against them anyway.
Yeah, it's great to see someone care that much, but it makes it that much more brutal that it ended up happening to her. So I've seen some people say, well, of course I don't have any sympathy because she should have flipped. Do you think she should have flipped, or she was just playing the odds here and it didn't end up going her way?
My first impression at this vote when I watched it live was, Why is basically anyone but David that enthusiastic about flipping here? Like, I get it. We got rationales from Jess saying, look, David played his idol on me. I owe him one. I'm going to go to war for him on this vote. And we got from Ken, as I flagged up earlier, like, I've sworn my loyalty to David. He's going to have my vote. I feel like if that really is the vibe between that trio, I am okay with Jess going to rocks and not wanting to disturb that, because I think what you definitely don't want to do, like, Survivor history is littered with the corpses of people who flipped out of fear of rocks and it ended up tanking their entire game and the entire game for everyone on their side. And you'd never want to be that person. I think going to rocks, I'm sure a lot of the people here were thinking, being fans of the show, thinking, so often, like I just said, people are afraid to go to rocks and that costs them their whole game. I'm not going to be that person. I'm going to make this big move that Jeff Probst always talks about because that's how you win the game. I think it was just unfortunate that, you know, someone has to draw the black rock. And in this case, it was Jess. And I am, while I am on board, I think at the end of the day with her specifically being so entrenched in that Gen X alliance going to rocks on their behalf, I feel horrible at seeing her handle it. Although I do like, by the way, that she's posting on Craigslist like she's selling the rock for $1 million. That was great. Yeah.
That was elite A-plus Twitter game right there.
Well, yeah. Incidentally, but, like, Jess is easily the social media MVP of the season.
Yeah,
she's already killing it for second chances, too, when the popularity contest starts again. She's putting in the volume now.
Playing the long game. But to go back to the Cochran comparison, which was the topic of the very first show we ever did over 5 years ago now, which, Jesus, that still sounds kind of weird to say.
Back when you were 12 years old.
Yeah. A little babby. I think the major point there was that when the sides are so clearly defined, if you flip, you guarantee, like, those five people that you just flipped on will hate you for the rest of the game. They're never going to vote for you. And you're joining a group which was tight enough that it was willing to go to rocks. And I guess you can say, by definition, this group was also that tight. But I think that there are some obvious differences where, like, you can be sure there's going to be some internal strife and conflict within that group now. And there's going to be something that you can work your way into. Whereas I think in Cochran's case, like, there was just no... people were saying, oh, well, we can offer you a Final Four deal or whatever. I don't know if he actually had a good reason to think, okay, I have a solid future here that I can work with. Whereas someone who's on the fence here, like Will, let's say, you know, if Will flips, Will's not out of the game. Like, Will's not drawing dead anymore. He can still make things happen.
Right. And I think, like, I think that definitely the argument could be made. Like, I'm certainly not saying... oh, I would not be coming in here killing Jessica, I don't think, if she had flipped and taken Hannah out. Like, I think that is a fine person potentially for Jess to, like, have leave this round were it under different circumstances. I just think the issue is the expectation is that clearly everyone else was willing to go to rocks for the cause, and she's the person who was not, and that's even, you know, with her closest allies there. But maybe there's an argument to be made of, like, just flip on Hannah, and then it's your closest allies that you've been with from day one that you can just say, look, I'm sorry, I'm just not willing to go to rocks. There's still a ton of game left. Gen X still seems to be in decent enough shape. Zeke's painting himself as a big target. Jay and Will are still big targets here. Adam's sketching everyone out. Hannah's all over the place. Or I guess Hannah's gone now. So Hannah's all over the place in Ponderosa. But we're still, point being, we could still be fine here. It's not like any of the three of us would be leaving if I'm Jess and Ken and David are the only people I care about. I could see an argument for flipping there. That being said, I'm not going to kill her by any stretch for going to rocks there. Who are you going to kill for going to rocks? It seems to me, at least, like, there are a couple people that it should at least be much more of a consideration to flip. Do you feel like, I guess let's start with Will. Do you feel like Will has business going to rocks here?
No, probably not. I think it, now that I think about it more, maybe it does make sense for almost everyone else. Like, I think Adam is maybe the one exception, but I don't know, like, when your closest ally has a head on the block and also you don't feel that good about anybody else, I think you can go through with that. I think the incentives are different based on who you are. So for someone like David, let's say, if he were to flip, obviously it would be bad for him in a game sense directly, but I think it would also be seen as like this act of cowardice where David is so neurotic, he's so lacking in confidence, unwilling to do anything himself, and now he compounds that by this like traitorous move. I think that would go down very poorly. Whereas someone who was more like self-assured could get away with it, as I said, on the grounds of like, okay, yeah, you hate me personally for making the move, but you kind of like grit your teeth and understand why that had to happen. Whereas David can't even make that argument. He would just be seen as this total failure.
Right. I think it is out. I would not endorse flipping if I am Zeke for sure. Obviously. I mean, Zeke has no one to flip onto. Or David, I think they are both fine to, you know, they have to spearhead their causes. I think it is understandable why both Ken and Jess would not be willing to flip on David's cause. So that really only leaves, you know, Hannah has nowhere to flip. So that only leaves Adam from that side. Zeke, as I said, I would say, you know, there's nowhere for him to flip. He has to lock his vote in. Jay, I feel, when he's wearing the necklace, I'm all about Jay forcing rocks, making the fireworks explode, open things up as much as we can, and hopefully rock my way into a majority, as we saw go down here. So I think the only candidates for me, the more I think about this, that I would really even open the door for flipping to avoid rocks would be Adam, Will, Brett, and Sunday. Yeah, and I think like a case could be made for all of them for sure to be, you don't want to draw a rock. Although I think in Adam's position in particular, I'm going to give him the least amount of grief because I think it really covers his idol and really increases his equity going forward to have that hidden idol. All right, Dom, so let's, I guess, get into parting thoughts on Jess here. Certainly not the way that I think either of us saw her going out this season. She was someone who was visible for the premiere and then popped up again in the merge, and was, it was certainly sprinkled in there quite a bit, but we really did not know how this story was ultimately going to go. What do you make of her getting the new Rock edit? I feel like this really redefines the Rock edit, Dom.
Yeah, so when we were going to Rocks, part of me did think, like, is this a new Katie Collins? Because the theory before was always, the person who gets idled, they don't want you to feel like some great injustice was done to them by the format of the game and then be taken out like that. So they tend to underplay them. And I think that's often, it works against that purpose, because it means we actually just don't care that the person left in the first place. And that's taken to the extreme with the Rock draw, where, you know, Katie Collins, I think, was a more subdued personality, didn't have too much going on game-wise. But then also, I think they wanted to not make it feel like someone got screwed out of the game by virtue of Buck. Whereas this time, like, Jess was built up as this big character who was going to be involved in stuff, even though, as we said, personality-wise, she was more muted to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely right that we typically, for people who leave the game in weird ways, I think they don't want us to feel like devastated for them. And that's probably a reason that we didn't see more of Jess. But I do feel like the reaction that we did get from her, where she did just, as I said, just kind of collapse and was crying, and, you know, was crying during her final words and so on, and completely understandably, I'm not trying to, like, give her a hard time for it. How do you think that's going to impact Rock draws going ahead? Do you feel like seeing her take it so hard is going to make future players who have seen the show and seen the historic Rock draws feel like, oh my God, why would I ever open the door for that to be me?
That's a good question. I think we'll never fully know what the impact of that is, right? Like, if there's a Rock draw on season 37, let's say, we're not going to know how much of that is all the obvious factors that were in play at the time, and how much of it is, like, watching this go down four seasons prior and not wanting the same thing to happen to you. Like, there's just really no way of passing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like any Rock draw, it just feels like it's such a monumental thing that it is going to almost inevitably shape some future close vote. I'm sure someone down the line is going to think back to, oh man, I really don't want to be Jessica here.
Yeah, it could almost go the other way from what I'm saying, where if this becomes a common thing somehow, which would be so unlikely but so fantastic, right? Like, if every season is just like a Rock draw gambling bonanza, then it might become so normalized that, like, the stigma or the fear of drawing a Rock just fades a bit, and so people will be more willing to do it, and, like, it's becomes like this self-perpetuating thing.
Well, I mean, I think as Survivor players over time become more and more Survivor literate as far as understanding the game, as we're seeing happen, as we talked about earlier, I'm sure that will tend to evolve. It's like more people will be out there understanding the benefit in certain scenarios of going to Rocks versus just being blanketly terrified of them the way that I think Cochran was in season 23. Like, Cochran 1,000,000% should have gone to Rocks, but he was just so terrified by the thought of it. We heard this directly from him, he said, it doesn't matter, I'm not going to Rocks under any case. I think as more people see more seasons play out, I think we are going to see people probably far more willing to go to Rocks, even despite seeing someone like Jessica leave in such a devastated manner. I guess let's get into, she gives the legacy advantage to Ken. I don't think this surprised anyone. Is Ken going to be the one who ends up playing it there, Dom?
So we had this discussion a few weeks ago when, of course, we assumed, naturally, Jess is still going to be there on day 36, because otherwise none of this makes any sense. But one thing we said there was, why would she give it to Ken over David, who directly saved her, has been really working on her behalf the entire time? Whereas Ken, as Shireen would have said, is just, like, sitting there looking pretty.
Oh, I mean, Ken, I thought it was very clear why she would give it to... I mean, as soon as David idled her, we got back the following week, and it was giving Ken the credit for saving her. And she was having a conversation with Ken about, hey, I have this legacy advantage.
Well, okay, elaborate on that then, because edit-wise, that would make sense if we're still on the Ken theory, but why would she, in that moment, give it to him?
I'm with you. It seems like David has been the one more proactively saving her, but as far as who I thought she was going to give it to, I thought Ken was the heavy, heavy, heavy favorite, even entering the episode. All right, so I guess good game, Jessica. I think she will potentially be back out on Survivor again. That's an early call for me for Jessica. I don't know how production feels about her, but I think that would be fun. Dom, how do we feel this next round is going to play out? Like, is Zeke in that majority just going to maintain here?
So I feel like that David, Ken, and maybe Hannah group now is going to emerge triumphant in the end. But also, the numbers seem to be against him now. So I'm not sure how that's going to turn around or what. It reminds me of... there's another recent example where we were saying, like, this person seems like obviously they're in there for the long haul, probably going to win, but it's not clear how the numbers are going to work out for them in the short term. Yeah, I can't recall who that was, but I think that same thing is in play here. So I think Zeke is going to try valiantly to save himself and scramble very hard. But ultimately, if he doesn't win immunity, then I think it's going to be this week or the next week. But hey, check back here in 4 weeks when Zeke is suddenly like at the head of this majority again. And you know, we'll be seeing a different tune.
Yeah, I think Zeke is, at least for me, I feel like Zeke is going to be in there. I think he's going to survive for another couple of rounds. I don't know if it's going to be like some immunity run or he is maintaining this majority. But I'm with you that I feel like it is ultimately going to be that David and Ken group that wins out. Like, I think they are going to be both probably in the finale at this point. And I think this is a good way to transition into like the winner edit talk for the people who want to be tuning out for that. But I still feel like Zeke is going to potentially be in there. And I think that's a good place to start with the potential winner edit is with Zeke. Do you feel like he's still drawing live for you? Because I definitely feel like Zeke had a lot of positive content this episode, and I was surprised to hear from so many people that they thought he was potentially turning more into a villain.
Yeah, I feel like if Zeke was the winner, what would they have done differently, do you think? Like, what was missing from the first like 9 episodes up until now that would really point you away from him?
Well, I felt like he was a little quiet in the beginning for what I would have anticipated from a win from a typical Zeke win edit. But other than that, no, I think certainly since the merge, that's why I've come so, you know, as we'll get to, I've come down pretty substantially from Ken and a lot higher up on David and Zeke after this episode. I feel like they both had a lot of potentially really compelling content in there. And again, a lot of potentially really compelling why they come up just close and don't win content. But I still feel like it could go either way.
Let's talk about Jay then quickly, because Jay, is he still on the board for you? Does he have a realistic shot to win in your mind?
I got, I know from at least Sarah Freeman and I think a couple other people that I was too hard on Jay last week and that I wasn't giving him enough credit as a player because to me he just seems to be in there kind of enjoying the experience but really doing his own thing. And I would say not totally trying to game super hard or be even fully aware of what's going on around him, which is fine. I do not have Jay, long story short, on my winner radar. I still feel like if he did win, we would be getting a much more heroic version of Jay. What do you think about that, though? Because he has gotten he got a crying confessional, right?
Yeah, he is back on the board for me. I don't know what a Jay winner edit would look like, but I don't think it looks too much different from what we saw. Like, if, as you say, they have to work with what they're given, and Jay is a very kind of out there character who at the same time has been shown to be mostly like fairly competent. I mean, there are some scenes which I think have doomed him in the eyes of like Edric or whatever. There was a thing about like him not making a fire properly or something. I don't remember the details, but Jay, he's at least back in the mix. Whereas before, like you were saying, Ken is like 150% or something. Like, that's no longer the case. I think the field has opened up and play continues.
I believe the highest I've ever been on Ken all season was 80%, and he's going to be lower than that today. But let's get into...
You think Ken's chances of winning the season are better than 95% of Jason's chances are on purpose? Yeah. I don't know. Ken... So if you had to assign a value to Ken, like has he dipped below the 50% mark for you yet?
I don't know. I think he's certainly getting close to right around the 50% mark, but I guess let's get into Ken, which is, for me, it really just comes down to why the hell did he get such a huge first 5 episodes or whatever it was? Like, why would they ever do that? And it does make sense that they would build up David and Zeke because they're such big characters who become such central focuses of the early post-merge. And Ken is not the most dynamic TV personality, and there's potentially going to be a lot more Ken later on. But that being said, I'm having a very hard time, obviously, reconciling a Ken win with one confessional in the last 5 episodes since the merge. Like, that is really tough to stare in the face, and that is, you know, that's why I'm bringing Ken down so much. Like, I think it's probably, I'll still take Ken against the field, but not by much. I'll give Ken like 55% to be the ultimate edger. Yeah.
We're not that far away. He's going to be in the 40s pretty soon at this rate.
I mean, and actually I should flag up one thing as far as why they would make Ken look so awesome early on and never show us a frame of him doing anything wrong. This came via email from Tim. And incidentally, if you guys want to email us your own takes, domandcolin@gmail.com. Tim wrote after episode 9, but we did not see it until recording this episode. After Ken won that immunity in episode 9, they get back to camp and he gets subtitled, "My knee hurts." I feel like, you know, especially on the heels of this talk about weird edits that people who leave the game from weird ways are potentially starting to get, that is in play for me that Ken gets medevaced, although I still think unlikely.
Okay.
But I would probably say...
So just to jump in there quickly, there's been some speculation about the scheduling of the season, and I think on the current schedule, we're down to 6 people entering the finale, which has never happened before for good reason. I think they don't want that to happen. Well,
it's definitely happened before.
Exclude like Redemption Island or whatever. Okay, we're going to pretend those seasons never occurred. But that could be in play, right? Like if there's an episode where Ken gets medevaced and also we have a boot, that would bring us down to 5, and it starts to look like a more normal season again.
I definitely think it's a possibility. Like to the point that I would say Ken is like 55% winner, 30% medevac, 15%
okay.
Some other result. Like, I don't know what else it could be other than winner or medevac. What could it be for you?
I don't know. I mean, he could just get voted out. I mean, that's what happens to most Survivor contestants.
But I mean, yeah, that's not what happens to Survivor contestants who get this treatment from the editors, which is the whole point.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer for you on that. I think you could be right.
Yeah, so I am, at this hour, I'm going to go... Give me Ken 55. I'm going to go Ken 60%. I still am too much of a believer in those early episodes. Give me Ken 60. Give me David 30. Give me Zeke 10.
You think Jay is out of play completely?
I think Jay is out of play. What do you think?
You're not feeling any Sunday comeback towards the end?
So, maybe a Sunjay comeback.
Jesus. I think for me, I don't want to put any values on it. You're going to make me, aren't you? We're not getting out of here. I'm not going to get to go to bed until I give you values for this. So, I don't know.
You're against Ken. You know he's going to win, but you can't do it right now. You can't pull the trigger. You're falling for it. And by the way, while you think about this and hem and haw, I do want to add the fact that we are coming in here, it's episode 11, I still think there are 3 people who could very easily win. I'm going to amend officially, by the way. Ken 60, David 25, Zeke 15. I think Zeke is still better than, I think 25 and 15
right.
is better
okay,
than
okay.
30, 40. But hang on, one quickly. I think the fact that there are 3 people that are still very viable candidates for me this deep into a season says to me this is one of the best edited seasons that we've had in a very long time for me. Like, I am so thrilled, especially after those early episodes where it looked to me like potentially another Michelle scenario. And the reason I described this season to a friend of mine who this is his first season he's ever watched. And after this week, I had initially described this season like through the first few episodes. Like, yeah, this is about an average season, maybe a little above average season. And then he sent me a text after this most recent episode saying, dude, if this is an average season of Survivor, I have been thoroughly missing out on this show for like the last 15 years. I think this has become an outstanding season of Survivor. That is my hot take of the week.
Wow.
I think this is becoming a very, very good season of Survivor, no matter how it goes. Anyway, give me your equity percentages. Have you had up to 100 yet?
I was hoping to like avoid having to do it by agreeing with your take and then moving on. But see, this is the same thing that happened with the election. Like, you were so confident that of course Hillary's going to win by some stonking margin, and then I bought into that. I didn't question you. You were so adamant. I thought, he must know what he's talking about. He seems so sure.
Think for yourself, Dom. That's what all of the listeners, don't take my word. I don't know what's going to happen. This is just my takes. Think for yourself.
See, I was the Ken skeptic to start with. So it feels like
David your favorite. I can see that you want to make David the front runner.
It feels like it should be Ken, right? Like but this is just bizarre. Like 5 episodes in a row, he gets one confessional across that entire time. Like I think that's the right figure anyway. Like what is going on? Like is this some amazing trolling effort on the part of the editors to like get all the people who are so who were like gloating about Michelle last season.
That's the thing, is it seems to me like if there was a season where they were going to go, you know, overcorrect so hard and just, you know, make the winner invisible on the heels of all of the smoke and mirrors that they went through with Michelle and Ko Rong, it seems like this would be the time. And it seems like Ken is a potentially suitable candidate for that.
But if they were trying to mislead you like that, they wouldn't give Ken a very conventional edit, if you know what the clues are to look for early on, and then pull the rug out from underneath us. They would just not give him that stuff in the first place.
Well, they would if they had heard us talk for 5 years about how the merge time is critical and going invisible right now is like, the reason that I'm in here talking about Ken still being my favorite is purely because of those early episodes.
Well, and there is also like a long-standing Edric principle that the pre-merge is what matters, and the merge episode is important, but by that point, you should have picked a winner, and everything post-merge is trying to make you doubt yourself and lead you astray and keep the suspense going. And I don't know how well that theory holds up, but it could be in play here. Like, maybe it has been Ken, we were correct to highlight all of that stuff in the first place, and now we are doing what they want us to be doing, which is like starting to question ourselves and keep that debate going.
Right, I mean, for me, it just comes down to this season. I've never seen the editors do it to me before, to give someone that glowing of an edit that early on. Like, it really was the Mike Holloway, the Michelle treatment early on, as far as I'm concerned. I need to see them do it to me before I'm willing to give them credit for being capable of a bluff like that. And I really hope that this is the season. And like I've been saying, it seems like the storytelling has been really well fleshed out and, like, complex enough, and the characters are really good enough that this could potentially be that season. Like, I barely have Ken against the field at this point, which, if you'd said that to me, 6 weeks ago, I was higher on Ken literally 2 months ago than I'm higher on Ken than I am right now. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, the only time that I can, you asked me this question the other day, like, have I ever been higher on someone who ended up, I think, not winning? And the only answer I could think of was Coach. And I know Wu entering the Kageon finale, but at this point in the season.
Let's not forget about Wu, please.
But that was purely entering the finale. I'm talking about at this point in the season. Yeah. We were like 75%. If you listen to our first season of podcast, we were talking about how Coach was such a big favorite. Yeah. All right. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see play out. I am hoping that Ken can overcome this kind of Brenda Lowe status and start getting some airtime in confessional form. He is getting a decent amount of face time in the camp life scenes. He's just not being the focal point of the narration, which is certainly a concern.
He's getting stuff, but it's always from other people. So we get this scene this week about Hannah connecting with Ken because Ken's such this amazing guy and he's so hot, and that's pretty much the extent of the analysis. But like, he's getting stuff about him in mostly favorable terms from other people, but he never gets a comment on anything.
Well, actually, to quickly touch on that, is Hannah in there for you? I know she's on a lot of people's radars after these last couple of weeks.
It is fun to think, how would a Hannah winner edit be different? Like, they would be like tearing their hair out, not knowing how to edit her. But I think it's too much. I don't think they would. Yeah, I think she's off the board.
Right. I think if they were faced with a Hannah win immediately on the heels of the Aubrey, the public being so devastated by Aubrey, I think they would just make her look a lot like Aubrey and make the public really happy that Hannah went on to win the way that Aubrey should have last season. All right. Dumb. Anything else that we want to be getting to before we get out of here this week? I know I'm sure there's going to be a lot next week to see play out.
Yeah, just to reiterate what you said, if you do have any hot takes you want to share with us, either about Survivor or the ultimate futility of the universe, then it's domandcolin@gmail.com, and I'm sure you can give our Twitter handles out if you want. But yeah, I think I'm all out for this week.
Sure, he is at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. We will be back next week. Thank you guys very much for listening. Take care, everybody.